Chapter 13. Influenza di Farma. The only enduring lessons learned from the 1976 swine flu fiasco were pernicious ones acquired by the pharmaceutical industry. The timeline of the affair raises the suspicion that drug companies opportunistically used sympathetic CDC insiders to exaggerate the purported threat of pandemic swine flu erupting in the fall of 1976. Likewise, the drug companies apparently persuaded the same government insiders to recommend that Congress grant liability protection to vaccine manufacturers. The result yielded a bonanza for Big Pharma, while leaving hundreds of Americans suffering from Guillain-Barré syndrome and taxpayers holding the bag. On June 11, 2009, the World Health Organization declared a new A/H1N1 influenza swine flu pandemic based mostly on questionable data from Mexico. The claim that the virus was novel was based entirely on the claim of molecular biologists that the H1N1 variant displayed signs of reassortment, that is, that two different viruses had apparently infected a host at the same time and reassorted into a new, highly pathogenic killer virus. No evidence of this theory was forthcoming in the real world. On the contrary, that virtually no one over the age of 60 developed severe disease indicated that older people had already been exposed to a similar virus decades earlier. Those who were infected developed mild symptoms, and the mortality rate was much lower than that of the 2009 seasonal flu. Nevertheless, the WHO pandemic declaration triggered governments all over the world to pre-purchase billions of new swine flu vaccines and antiviral medications that proved to be useless. Once again, the so-called pandemic proved to be a colossal windfall for Big Pharma while leaving taxpayers holding the bag. By the year 2011, almost a century had passed since 1918, and still, the world had not experienced another horribly virulent pandemic flu. This created a problem for innumerable senior influenza specialists who'd spent decades preparing for the long-prophesied showdown. These men were analogous to senior military commanders who'd drilled their whole lives for war and, on the verge of retirement, had to face the fact that they would never get to fight one and attain glory for it. The 2009 swine flu had proven profitable, but it was doubtful that the influenza industry could keep the gravy train rolling without the emergence of a serious disease. And so, because nature still hadn't yielded a virulent new strain, the virologists Yoshihiro Kawaoka and Ron Fouché decided to create one. Far more terrifying than the swine flu virus of the phony 2009 pandemic is avian influenza, especially H5N1, which has been shown to have a high mortality rate, 60% of reported human cases in which the patient sought urgent medical care, but has never achieved human-to-human transmission. By 2011, both Kawaoka, University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Fouché, Erasmus Medical Center, Netherlands, independently conducted experiments to assess whether H5N1 could become transmissible between mammals. Ferrets, whose respiratory tract physiology closely resembles the human, were used as the animal model. Fouché's team began with an H5N1 strain isolated in Indonesia and introduced specific mutations, two in the hemagglutinin, HA, protein to change receptor binding from avian type to human type, and one in the PB2 polymerase gene to enhance replication in mammalian cells. They then serially passaged the virus through ferrets, and after 10 passages, observed airborne transmission between ferrets in adjacent cages. 5 mutations in total were identified as critical for this transmissibility. Kawaoka's group generated a reassortment virus combining the HA gene from the H5N1 with 7 segments from the 2009 H1N1 pandemic strain, which already had efficient human transmissibility. They engineered 4 mutations in the HA protein, enabling respiratory droplet transmission in ferrets. Both manuscripts were submitted in 2011, Fouché's to Science and Kawaoka's to Nature, which sparked widespread alarm in the scientific community. The U.S. National Science Advisory Board for Biosecurity, NSABB, recommended redacting key methodological details due to bioterrorism and biosafety concerns. This led to a temporary publication delay. After further debate, including international input and the development of new biosafety guidelines, both papers were published, Kawaoka's in May 2012 and Fouché's in June. The episode ignited an ongoing global debate over the ethics and safety of creating highly pathogenic agents that could, accidentally or deliberately, be released from a lab. Fouché and Kawaoka claimed their research enables mankind to stay ahead of the natural evolution of influenza viruses to prepare for their eventual emergence. Equipped with these pathogens, researchers could, they claimed, develop vaccines and antiviral medications to counter them if viruses like them should ever strike. The trouble with this dubious reasoning is that such dangerous pathogens are far more likely to escape from a lab than to evolve naturally, a purely theoretical prospect that may never happen in millions of years. In 2020, humanity would learn the hard way how dangerous it is to engineer pathogenic and highly transmissible agents in a lab. The totality of evidence strongly suggests that, as the FDA virologist Dr. J. Anthony Morris stated in the summer of 1976, flu vaccines don't work. The influenza virus antigenically drifts and shifts, enabling it to evade antibody coverage. The very failure of flu vaccines to provide reliable and lasting protection is what enables their manufacturers to sell new ones every year. Any other product that had to be replaced every September and probably still didn't work would quickly lose all customers. It's a testament to the mystical hold that vaccines have on the human mind that many who have received the annual flu shots still contract the flu, but still get the next year's shot. In addition to their mutability, upper respiratory viruses such as influenza and coronavirus replicate in the mucosa of the nasal passage, where they are fairly insulated from the action of antibodies that circulate in the blood. It's not until the virus moves into the gas exchange region of the lungs that these antibodies are brought to bear on it. By then, the patient is already well into his trial with the illness and has been contagious for a week or more. This makes it formidably difficult to immunize against influenza and coronaviruses with vaccines injected into the arm that induce the production of blood antibodies. It will probably come as a surprise to many listeners that Anthony Fauci and 2 of his colleagues at the NIAID explicitly acknowledged this in a 2022 paper. As they wrote, "Non-systemic respiratory viruses such as influenza viruses, SARS-CoV-2, and RSV tend to have significantly shorter incubation periods and rapid courses of viral replication. They replicate predominantly in local mucosal tissue and do not significantly encounter the systemic immune system or the full force of adaptive immune responses, which take at least 5 to 7 days to mature, usually well after the peak of viral replication and onward transmission to others. Taking all of these factors into account, it is not surprising that none of the predominantly mucosal respiratory viruses have ever been effectively controlled by vaccines. In addition to their lack of efficacy, influenza vaccines still cause many injuries every year. Indeed, most payouts from the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, established by the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986, are for severe adverse reactions to influenza vaccines. We believe that instead of focusing on new flu vaccines, more research should be conducted to develop other measures for fighting the disease. These include better animal husbandry practices, the widespread use of virucidal nasal sprays to prevent infection and transmission, and a focus on immune health and therapeutic medicines for treating influenza in its early stage.